Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rhoda. We are joined today by Dana Cree, executive pastry chef of the Publican Restaurants in Chicago and the author of the book, Hello, My Name is Ice Cream, The Art and Science of the Scoop. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Many ice cream books tend to choose a method and stick to it, whether it's no-churn ice cream or using a particular stabilizer. But in this book, you really explore the pros and cons of various methods and why they work the way they do. What are some of those sort of general methods for making ice cream, and why might different ones work better for different situations?
Well, there are four basic styles of ice cream. Custard ice cream, which enriches the ice cream with egg yolks. And then there's what's called Philadelphia ice cream, which doesn't have any egg yolks in it. It's just dairy and sugars and flavors. And it's so prevalent that we don't even know it as Philadelphia ice cream. We just call it ice cream in America.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that because I'm from South Jersey and I'd never heard Philadelphia style ice cream.
Yeah, it's so dominant in America that we just know it as ice cream. And then there are sherbets, which I sort of feel are a lost art. They are very low in butterfat and very high in fruit. And then, of course, frozen yogurts, which are not the soft-serve frozen yogurts that have cropped up all over in top-it-yourself shops, but ice creams that celebrate the flavor of yogurt.
So where do some other frozen dairy products like soft serve ice cream or gelato or sherbet with the extra R fit in that map?
Well, gelato and soft serve are all very machine dependent, especially soft serve and frozen custard as well, for that matter. Both soft serve and frozen custard are entirely dependent on the machine that produces them. They are a little bit lower in air, so they're very, very dense and creamy, and you eat them before all of the butterfat and ice has a chance to harden up. So they're formulated very differently to be dense right when they come out of the machine. And ice cream, it's called American Hard Pack Ice Cream, and it's meant to be hardened overnight and then scooped, and these are the scoops that you can bite into, basically.
Between the emulsifiers and the stabilizers and the destabilizers, the science can be a bit complex, and ice cream is really this very scientific food. It's a lot about the way that the molecules of ice and fat and protein interact, but you write about that science in such accessible ways. Where do you draw inspiration for writing about food science in a way that makes people are eager to learn more rather than being intimidated? And when did you decide to write a book that really delved into the science and didn't shy away from that at all?
Well, I suppose as a reader and an ice cream lover who has, of course, every ice cream book ever written, I felt like there was sort of a gap between either dumbing it down so much that the book would basically say, if you add corn syrup, your ice cream will be less icy. But they don't tell you why or how to use that piece of information outside of the recipes given. And then there are another set of ice cream books that are so packed with information, they kind of talk over your head. And I wanted to sort of write a book that was the book I wanted to find when I started reading about ice cream, which gave me all the information I needed in a way that would allow me to both follow the recipes in the book, but then use it outside of just the recipes in the book as well.
And how about ice cream school? I didn't know that that existed, but you're a graduate of it. And is that where you really got into all the science, or is that more from your pastry chef background?
No, I actually just went to the Penn State Ice Cream Short Course. I attended that within the last year and a half. And my interest in the science of ice cream started about 10 years ago as a pastry chef after I spent some time at Heston Blumenthal's The Fat Duck, which was one of the early fathers of molecular gastronomy, which is known for being very flashy and very scientific and sort of full of magic tricks. But what I learned there was that underlying every technique in food is a lot of scientific information that is both interesting, and if you can grasp it, you can build your cuisine in more thorough, thoughtful, and delicious ways. So once I found out that ice cream was as complex as it was, it satisfied both my curiosity as a nerd and my desire to create perfect ice cream texture as a pastry chef.
And you talk in the book about how Ben & Jerry's really changed the texture game for commercial ice cream. The idea of cookie dough ice cream was once revolutionary. Now it's sort of a standard go-to. You build the perfect scoop in the later sections of the book with a number of different add-ins, from ripples to bits to chunks. How do you think about texture and the amount of add-ins that enhance an ice cream's experience while still balancing with the ice cream base and not being overwhelming?
So I came of age in the era of Ben and Jerry, which really pioneered the add-ins. There had been add-ins in ice cream before, butter pecans, chocolate chips, maybe little candy cups, but Ben and Jerry's, from my point of view anyway, was really the first one to just start shoving gobs and gobs of things inside the ice cream, which I love. Like, I love chewy textures and crunchy textures and ribbons and ripples and bits and bobs. And there can't be too many add-ins in an ice cream. The third section in the book is called Composed Scoops, and this is where we sort of reimagine an ice cream as a dessert. Rather than putting the ice cream on the dessert, we put the dessert in the ice cream. And there are some very simple ones that we know and love. A couple twists. There's cookies and cream, which is just like cookies and cream ice cream with vanilla ice cream and chocolate wafers, but we also put bits of the chocolate cookie dough in it as well. And then there are some that are inspired by desserts that I created, like Kids Play Ice Cream, which is a goat cheese ice cream with chunks of almond cake, a ribbon of plum caramel. And that was inspired by a dessert that I had on the menu at Avec when I was the pastry chef there. If you have too many add-ins in the ice cream, the texture and flavor of the ice cream are overwhelmed. But I like to sneak if I can get three or four in there sometimes, or sometimes it's just a simple single add-in.
If you're stuck for ideas on how to develop your logo, website, or business cards, turn to creative minds from around the world via Design Crowd. Design Crowd is a website that helps businesses crowdsource custom graphics from over 500,000 designers worldwide. From social media graphics to flyers, menus, packaging, and even t-shirts, Design Crowd lets you get the perfect custom design every time or your money back. Rather than paying expensive fees and waiting weeks for an agency to pitch an idea, you can have exactly what you need within just 3 days. Simply post a brief describing the design you need, and within hours, you'll receive your first design to review. Then once you've selected your favorite design, you'll be sent all the files you need to update your branding. It's that easy. And now, our listeners can receive up to $100 off their design project by going to designcrowd.com/clever. That's designcrowd.com/clever for a special $100 VIP offer for Clever Cookster listeners. Or simply enter the discount code CLEVER when posting a project on Design Crowd. And now, back to our podcast. I feel like in this era of sort of reinvented artisanal ice cream, nobody bats an eye at the idea of toasted hay ice cream, which is an amazing recipe you have in the book, or goat cheese ice cream. But I love how you talked about that there are certain ingredients that you really have to think about how to get the flavor in without compromising the texture, because I think we've all had the experience of buying some, you know, sweet corn meal ice cream that is sort of weird and gritty, or an ice cream that just sort of doesn't work. I love the popcorn example. How did you nail buttered popcorn ice cream?
Well, one of the most common questions I get about ice cream from homemakers is, how come when I change, like when I start altering the recipe for flavor, the texture falls apart? And a lot of these recipes in the book took quite a bit of work to transfer flavor into the ice cream without making the texture gritty or gummy or too icy or too, in the case of the popcorn, too starchy. So we wanted to capture the flavor of buttered popcorn and ice cream, and I tried several things, including blending popcorn into ice cream base, but the starches and the hot ice cream base actually created very boogery, snotty, gummy chains of starch, which is very unpleasant. So we started infusing fresh popped popcorn into the ice cream and then straining it out, but then we lost a lot of water. So we finally decided to infuse the popcorn, let it chill, and then blend the popcorn into the ice cream, which texturally was very pleasing for us, but we were still missing something. And it was actually a cook of mine who came up with the idea to pop the popcorn in a pot with butter, and then pour the milk and dairy right into the pot to capture the flavor of the toasted oil, because it was really missing that element. I really feel like this book is so much more than just what I could come up with. And I opened up conversations with almost everybody in my life for what flavor of ice cream do you like? Or if I can't get something, what would you do if you were doing this? And this popcorn ice cream is one of those where it's bigger than just me.
I was fascinated, too, with the outline of how color really impacts our experience of flavor and how unexpected ingredients like spirulina or activated charcoal can make ice cream flavors even more like themselves, that we really have this link in our minds between the different senses that we use to experience a food. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you prefer to use some of those natural ingredients rather than just food coloring?
Well, we all know that we use our tongues, our sense of taste, when we eat. But in reality, we use every single sense that we have. We use our eardrums because they're maybe an inch away from our mouths. It would be impossible not to hear ourselves eating. We use our sense of feel, which is texture. We use our sense of smell because there are only five pieces of information the tongue can gather. And that's salty, sweet, sour, bitter, and umami. Everything else that makes the flavor is an aroma compound. And we sense that in the back of our mouth through our olfactory glands, which is where the mouth meets the nasal cavity and the information goes to a different part of the brain. And then the very first sense we use when we eat is our sense of sight, because we see the food before we even put it in our mouths. And it's the sense of sight that helps us predict what a flavor is going to be. So the sense of sight is so strong that it can often be misleading as well. If we see the color orange, we are going to flip mentally through a list of flavors that we already associate with the flavor of orange. And this trick was sort of played on diners at the Fat Duck when I spent a little bit of time there, where we got a disc of jelly. Half of it was orange and half of it was red, and you were told it's the flavors of beets and oranges. And you look at the disc and you see red and orange and you think, okay, beets are red and oranges are orange. And then you eat it and it takes your brain a little bit to correct and realize that it's blood orange and golden beets. Because our sense of sight is so strong, it can override the information our tongue and our nose are collecting. So the color wheel that I added to the book allows you to tint your ice creams 8 different colors, all the colors of the rainbow, and then brown and black, according to the flavors of the ice cream. And it was actually the last thing I added to the book. It wasn't even in the book proposal when I talked with my editor, Frances Lam, about writing it. It came into play after I spent 3 months in my home with a recipe tester testing all of the recipes, and I was staring at white scoop after white scoop after white scoop. And popcorn looked exactly like cinnamon basil, and donut looked exactly like cardamom, but the flavors were so vastly different. So I started looking at different things that I knew we could color ice cream with. Like, I knew that you could color mint ice cream with blending mint leaves into it, but also spirulina. I knew you could tint ice cream pink with beet juice. And I started looking into other things. So there's a little color wheel of all natural ingredients. I didn't feel like I needed to put a color wheel of food dyes in there. It's fairly obvious. You want to make something red, you put red food coloring in. You want to make something yellow, you put yellow food coloring in. But with this color wheel, if you want to make something pink, you can put beet juice in. Or if you want to make something yellow, you can use turmeric root. And I feel like the really exciting one came for me when I found blue, which I didn't think I would find. But there is a modified spirulina that actually makes your ice cream robin's egg blue. And it's so pretty. And it stinks to high heaven. But I swear to God, you use so little of it, you won't taste it or smell it at all once it's in your ice cream.
Well, it's a really beautiful book. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. And thank you for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Check out Dana's book, Hello, My Name is Ice Cream, The Art and Science of the Scoop, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.